Please be seated. The writer S.I. Macmillan tells the story of a young woman who was applying to the college of her dreams, but her heart sank when she saw one particular question on the application. "Are you a leader?" it asked. Well, being an honest, conscientious, self-aware person, she knew that she could only answer no to that question. She did, returned the application, expecting the worst. But to her surprise, in a few weeks, she received the following response from the college. Quote, "Dear applicant, a study of the application forms reveals that this year our college will have 1,452 new leaders. We're accepting you, because we feel it's imperative that they have at least one follower," unquote. You know, it's probably true of most jobs, but I think of the church work in particular is susceptible to something called Parkinson's Law, which says work expands to fill the time available for its completion. You know, I don't think I've ever met a pastor who wasn't chronically overworked. Now, that's not to say that they don't love their job or they would trade it for some less stressful profession, but it is to say that almost every pastor is constantly looking for help. And that's probably why those of us in ministry have a tendency to think of everyone we meet as a potential ministry leader in training. We entertain the fantasy that if we can just sign you up, you'll take on some of those tasks that we just don't have time for, and we'll be able to devote our time to those other precious tasks. You'll lead some ministry with dedication and brilliance, and we can just forget about that one and move on to something else. But here's the sad truth of the matter. Not everyone is called to be a leader. Not everyone even wants to be a leader. In her book, The Preaching Life, Barbara Brown Taylor writes the following, quote, "I'll never forget the woman who listened to my speech on the ministry of the laity as God's best hope for the world and said, 'I'm sorry, but I just don't want to be that important.' Like many of those who sit beside her at church, she hears the invitation to ministry as an invitation to do more, to lead the every member canvas or cook supper for the homeless or teach vacation church school. Or she hears the invitation to ministry to be more generous, to be more loving, more religious. No one has ever introduced her to the idea that her ministry might involve being who she already is and doing just what she already does with one difference, namely that she understands herself to be God's child in and for the world," unquote. You know, I think Barbara Brown Taylor is calling attention here to a very common phenomenon. Which of us doesn't feel that we should be doing more and being more? If we're not actively involved in a dozen things, we feel like we're not pulling our weight. And if we're not leading in at least one area, we'll feel like we're a failure. It's the leaders that make the difference, right? I mean, who wants to be just a follower? But I'm here to convince you this morning that a follower is exactly what we're called to be. Of course, there are those among us who are called to be leaders. But all of us are called to be followers. And we get into trouble sometimes when we don't recognize the difference. Years ago, before Reverend Kieran got here, in fact, I would often handle the new membership classes here at MCC Austin. And among other things, we would ask prospective new members to fill out a ministry interest survey. It listed each of the 15 or so ministries that we had at that time. And we ask each prospective new member to rank their top three choices for ministry. The idea was that someone would contact them about joining one of them. Now, we were operating under a common, a popular theory of church growth that says that the way you get people to stick around a church is to give them a friend and give them a job. And that's just a clever way of saying that folks become committed to a church to the extent that they feel that someone cares about them, and feel that they're actively involved in the life of the church. And in theory, that's a fine idea. But our ministry interest survey approach didn't work very well. In fact, our success rate at getting new members involved in ministry was really pretty lousy. And in retrospect, we shouldn't have been surprised. Because just because somebody wants to be a part of the church, even to be a member of the church, doesn't necessarily mean that they're ready to sign up for a ministry. After all, they're just starting a new relationship, and already we're asking them to sign up for chores. And you know, to many people, there's just something daunting about signing on any dotted line, even when there's commitment's not really that binding. But I think there's actually a deeper reason why it didn't work very well. Particularly at MCC churches, many people come through our door very tentatively. Maybe they felt beaten up or beaten down by the other churches they've tried. Maybe they've even wanted to take on some leadership roles in those churches, but were rebuffed. And they bought into the subtle or sometimes not so subtle message that folks like them just aren't appropriate church leadership material. Maybe they heard the whispering. You wouldn't want someone like that teaching Sunday school, would you? But then somehow they find their way here. And at first they're just checking us out, seeing what this church without walls stuff is all about. And they're pretty happy to just sit in the back and see what happens. But maybe at some point they start to see that this place really is what it purports to be. It doesn't expect them to pretend to be something they're not. And maybe then they start looking around for ways to get more involved. But it may take a while, maybe a few weeks, a few months, maybe even years. But is that okay? What does the gospel have to say about that? Doesn't the gospel tell us that we should be involved, to be leaders, not followers, active, not passive? After all, in the so-called Great Commission, Jesus says, go forth and baptize all nations. And you're sure not going to do that by just warming a seat. But here's the thing. Jesus gave that commission to his disciples at the very end of his ministry here on earth. And by then, they'd already spent 3 or so years being followers, warming a seat, so to speak, at the feet of the Master, studying his unique leadership style. And even after 3 years of being with Jesus, observing Jesus, following Jesus, one of them betrayed him. One of them denied him 3 times, and the rest of them ran off in his time of greatest need. And these were the guys to whom he was entrusting his mission here on earth? You know, we tend to think of the apostles as leaders, heroic exemplars of faith, fearlessly spreading the message of Jesus at great personal risk. And in one sense, that's true. But that's what happened after Jesus left the scene. After Pentecost, when they stepped up their game and stepped into positions of leadership in the early church. But for the 3 years prior to that, they weren't exactly studies in Leadership 101. By and large, they were a bunch of bumbling, self-centered, misguided misfits. They weren't leading anyone. They were following Jesus. After all, the word disciple just means follower. But at least they were special people, weren't they? Hand-picked by Jesus for his inner circle? Well, no. It was pretty accidental that they came to be there at all. Consider today's reading from John's Gospel. 2 disciples of John the Baptist are trailing Jesus because their master has pointed him out to them. What do you want? He asked them. Rabbi, where are you staying? Come and see for yourself, he says. Come and see. And then one of them, Andrew, goes off and tells his brother Simon about this teacher they found. Come and see, he says. This could be the one. But notice that these are not extraordinary people. They're common laborers, small businessmen, tax collectors. There's not a Harvard MBA or a West Point grad in the bunch. There was no entrance exam for the membership in the Friends of Jesus Club, no questions about theological orthodoxy, no leadership aptitude test, no background check. Heck, not even a ministry interest survey to fill out. Just a simple come and see, or a simple follow me. You know, there are six places in John's gospel alone where Jesus invites someone with the words, follow me. But as hard as I try, I can't find anywhere in the gospels where he tells someone to go and lead. So where do we get this idea that being just a follower is a bad thing? Well, Jesus himself was a leader, right? He must have been. These disciples left their livelihoods, their homes, their families to follow him. So maybe his leadership style was so inspiring that they all wanted to be leaders just like JC. But what was it he did again? Oh yeah, he washed their feet and told them to do likewise. He said to them, whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant. And he told them, the first among you must be the least. It doesn't sound like being a leader in the Jesus movement was all that glamorous. Apparently, even the leaders in this new Christian movement had to act like followers and be servants of all. You know, I'm not sure that's the model of leadership they teach at the Harvard Business School. So what are the lessons for us individually? Well, first, even though we tend to idolize leaders, maybe it's being a follower that's what it's really all about. And maybe being a follower of Jesus, to paraphrase Barbara Brown Taylor, may mean nothing more than being who we already are and doing what we already do, but with one big difference, namely understanding ourselves to be God's children in and for the world. Because if you understand yourself to be a child of God, then maybe you'll start treating your siblings with a bit more love and respect, and then the world will be a better place. And a second lesson is this. You don't have to be extraordinary in any way to be a follower of Jesus Christ. You're welcome at the family table no matter what skills you bring, no matter what gifts you offer, no matter what you might have done. You're welcome because you're already part of the family. We're all children of the same parent. And you don't have to do more or be more to be welcome there. So what are the lessons for us as a church? Maybe it's that if we want to continue to grow as a church, to attract new members, then all we really have to say is, come and see. Come and see if we're authentic. Come and see if we're welcoming. Come and see if we're truly striving to be this church without walls that we profess we'd like to be. Come and see if we're truly trying to follow the Lord we confess. Come and see for yourself. And if you find here an authentic, welcoming community, if you find here something of which you'd like to be a part, well, stick around a while. Accept our invitation to come and join us, to follow Jesus with us. But on the other hand, if you find that we're not all that we profess to be, if we're not completely authentic, not completely welcoming, not completely true to the mission we proclaim, Don't leave. Help us to be more than we are. Help us to be all that we claim that we want to be. And if you happen to have some leadership skills that you'd like to share with us, well, we could sure use them. But if you'd like to be a faithful follower instead, well, that's just fine too. After all, every institution needs at least one follower. The late Dr. Fred Craddock was distinguished professor of preaching at Candler School of Theology. He was one of the most beloved and renowned preachers of the 20th century. In one of his books, he writes of a vacation trip he took with his wife to the smoking bowels of Tennessee. Hoping to find a quiet meal, they had stopped into a lovely little restaurant in a place called the Black Bear Inn. And while they were waiting for their food, they noticed a distinguished-looking white-haired gentleman making his way from table to table, visiting with the guests. And Dr. Craddock whispered to his wife, "I sure hope he doesn't come over here." But of course he did. "Where are you folks from?" he asked. "Oklahoma," Craddock replied. "And what do you do?" Well, Craddock was thinking that it was none of his business, but not wanting to be impolite, he replied that he was a minister and a college professor. The fellow perked up. "Oh, a preacher. Well, I've got a story for you." And he pulled out a chair and sat down. Dr. Craddock groaned inwardly. Everyone, he thought, has a preacher story. But he listened politely. "Name's Ben Hooper," the man continued. "I was born back here in these mountains, and when I was growing up, I attended Laurel Springs Church. My mother was unmarried, and as you might expect in those days, I was embarrassed about that. At school, I would hide in the weeds by a nearby river and eat my lunch there because, well, the other children could be very cruel. And when I went into town with my courageous mother, I would see the way people looked at me, trying to guess who my daddy was. We had a new preacher, and he fascinated me. But at the same time, he scared me. He had a long beard and a rough-hewn face, a deep voice. But I sure liked to hear him preach. But I didn't think I was welcome at church, and so I would go just for the sermon. And as soon as the sermon was over, I would rush out so nobody would say to me, 'What's a boy like that doing in church?' One day, though, I was trying to get out, but some folks had already gotten into the aisle, and I had to remain. And I was waiting, getting in a cold sweat, when all of a sudden, I felt a hand on my shoulder. And I looked out of the corner of my eye and saw the face of the preacher. And I was scared to death. For a moment, he didn't say a word. He just looked me up and down, and then he said, 'Well, boy, you're a child of—' And he paused. And I knew he was going to try to guess not who my mother was, but who my father was. The preacher said, 'You're a child of— why, you're a child of God. I see a striking resemblance, boy.' And he swatted me on the bottom and said, 'Go, claim your inheritance.' The old man looked across the table at Dr. Craddock and said, 'That was the single most important sentence anyone ever said to me. I was born on that day. You know, if that preacher hadn't told me that I was one of God's children, I probably never would have amounted to anything.' After the old man walked away, Dr. Craddock called the waitress over and asked her, 'Do you know who that man was that was sitting at our table?' And the waitress grinned, and she said, 'Well, of course, everybody here knows him. That's Ben Hooper. He's the former governor of Tennessee.' My friends, no one could argue that Governor Ben Hooper wasn't a leader. But he only became a leader after he understood who he truly was. A child of God, a follower of Jesus Christ. And in the end, it didn't matter that he was born out of wedlock. It didn't matter that he was surrounded by ignorance and cruelty. It didn't matter that others looked down on him. All that mattered, as that country preacher reminded him, was his inheritance as a child of God. But that's the same inheritance we all have. It's our birthright. It's ours to claim. Not because of anything we've done or might do, or anything we've been or might be, but just because we're all children of God. Maybe you're called to be a leader here at MCC Austin, or maybe not. But either way, I can promise you that your gifts will be welcomed and appreciated, because either way, you're called to be a follower of the one who beckons with a gentle, "Come and see." And maybe you'll simply understand that your special ministry involves being who you already are and doing what you already do. And that's okay too. As long as you do it with the knowledge that you're God's child in the world. And I can promise you that it will be enough if, whenever someone looks at your life, they can say, "If you want to see a faithful follower of the Lord Jesus Christ, here's one. Come and see." Amen.